Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So on this week's episode, I'm an absolute fan of 911 podcasts. Supermarket is out now, which is an absolute hoot. And would like to welcome onto the show Adam Marciano, Alexandria Benoit. See, I got it right, Benoit.
Yes.
And Antonio Cordero. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, yeah. Glad to be here.
So before we start talking about this incredible show that you've all created, I wanted to get a bit of background so the audiences can get to know you a bit better. So we'll start with Adam. Yeah. What is your background, your experience within the industry?
I started doing this when I was so young, when I was about 12 years old. My grandparents did it, so I was around it as a child, and it made it feel tangible that I was able to be in this industry, because I feel like a lot of kids think like, oh, Hollywood, it's so far away. But growing up in Toronto, you can be on the streets and see like things filming around. So it just felt I was able to do it, and begged my parents for an agent, and they obviously said no. And then finally I convinced them when I was 12, and I just started working ever since, and then did small roles here and there throughout my years. And then 2020 hit, and that's when I approached Antonio and I said, look, we got to do something on our own, but we're all isolated. So how are we going to make a project? And we came up with audio dramas, and the rest is history.
Excellent. And Alexandria, yeah. What about you?
I have been in the entertainment industry for a very long time, since the tender year of 9 years old.
Wow,
I grew up as a performer. I booked every role I had auditioned for when I was a child until I landed my first principal agent at 14. I did a lot of work in the independent film industry, and then it kind of blossomed from there. I got to travel for work. I went to Nova Scotia to work on a Stephen King show. I went to Cuba to work on another television show. I got to work on lots of really amazing projects. I got to work on an Emmy-nominated television series you may know called Degrassi. We just got our star in the Canadian Hall Walk of Fame. I have had a really great career, and I'm really grateful for it. And with a background in the industry, my family is in the industry as well. I have a director who is my uncle. He is a very famous director, and his father was actually a very famous stuntman in Hollywood. He was the very first Spider-Man. So it just kind of came naturally to me. I've always been a born performer. I took ballet and every kind of dance you could imagine up until I was in my late teens, and I was with the National Ballet School of Canada. I performed in the Nutcracker, so performance has always been in my blood.
I mean, just a quick question around that, because when you've got family that are quite well known in the industry, do you try and keep that sort of low key, because you don't want to, you know, let that sort of, I don't know, help you through the industry, or basically do you use it to your advantage?
To become a Nepo baby, you mean? After all this time, I definitely have earned my stripes through producing, directing, acting, and writing. I feel like if there's an opportunity that comes my way, it'll happen.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much. And then last but not least, Antonio, what is your background, sir, within the industry?
Very similar to Alex and Alexandria and Adam. I grew up as a child actor from, around 9 years old as well. So I've been in the industry for about 20 years. I did various things. I did a couple small roles when I was younger, but then I actually moved into stand-up comedy and performing that in Toronto in my early like teen years, actually, like 17. And then I moved to Vancouver about 7 years ago and started pursuing more of a combination of directing, writing, and producing as well. Did a couple of short films. I'm currently working on a TV show called Alert, starring Scott Conn. I almost said Jason because it's his character name. But just kind of doing the day in and day out of that, and primarily doing directing now. But yeah, I started out as a performer as well.
Let's talk about Supermarket, and we've got a great song to play, and afterwards we'll get on with talking about the series.
He became a sitcom star at age 15 until a hacker leaked a video that showed his peen. What a cruel mistress, the Fame Machine. He went the way of Roseanne Barr and Paula Deen. He moved back with his parents, had to get a job, but his resume was lacking, things were looking hard. Found himself begging the owner of a grocery store. Carson, sitcom star. Rags to riches, riches to rags. Pricing stickers, grocery bags. Clean that spill in aisle 12. Carson's career has been shelved.
Oh, so that is Supermarket, a six-part. That song is hilarious, honestly.
Yes.
I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But this is a six-part podcast series. So before we get into the nitty-gritty, I've got to say a massive congratulations because, you know, it can't be easy to take on a task of writing comedy and producing a show like this and then putting all that hard work in and not sure if it's going to resonate with the audiences as you intended. But it obviously has yeah. Because I've got a side there, number one. Number one. So after all that hard work and all those hours recording this amazing show, I mean, how does it feel? We'll start with Antonio. How does it feel knowing, you know, how much success you've had so far, and I'm sure it's going to get even bigger and better?
Oh, see, I'm the last person you want to ask that question, because to me, I try not to like pay attention as much as I can and let it get to my head. It definitely feels good. And I was actually just talking to Adam about it yesterday that, you know, we face so much rejection in the film industry, storytelling industry, that when you actually have a success, it doesn't feel real. It doesn't really hit until like something else happens on top of it. And then it's like, oh, I should kind of like just enjoy the moment. And then my workaholic mind kicks in and I go back to writing. So I just can't, I can't seem to enjoy it is what the answer is.
I mean, I know that performers and people in the industry like yourself do this work because you enjoy it. It's something that you're passionate about and you get something out of it. But obviously getting recognition and knowing how well it's doing, it's obviously a massive bonus as well. So Adam, I mean, how does it feel to know that it went number one? I mean, that must be amazing.
Like Antonio said, it feels so surreal. Like, we don't do it for the number ones. We don't do it for all that. We do it because we want to create a show that's entertaining to people. So to us, we already won by having the people online saying how much they loved it and how much they enjoyed the characters and all that. That was our win, you know? But then this was just an extra bonus. And we were like, holy, you know? So I don't know. It's surreal, but again, it's just like Antonio said, we're thankful and we're grateful, but back to work and continue on, you know, for sure.
And Alexandria, I mean, when recording this and working on this project, did you feel at any point that actually we're on to a winner here? This is going to be just a smash hit.
I knew it from the moment I read the pilot.
She's been the biggest fan.
I'm the cheerleader behind the whole thing. I thought it was so funny, unique, and hilarious that it would resonate with people. I thought it hadn't been done before, and I really wanted Adam to do it. So we all came together and pushed to make it happen.
Excellent.
I was not really down for a while. I was second guessing a lot of it, and we had to, pun intended, we had to shelve the show for about a year because I was like, this is not what I'm feeling.
Spoiler. And then a name we thought it could be.
We were going to call the show Shelved, actually, because Carson's career gets shelved. But, you know, so it took a while, and then we put everything aside, and then we started up again, and then we felt better about the writing because we took that break, and then we came into it way more open-minded, less like fear of any, you know, judgment. And that's when all the magic really happened, because we were just having fun with it instead of being so serious before, you know? So,
I mean, what was the development like for this show? I mean, how did the concept come about?
Do you guys remember? Because I don't. I don't remember. I feel like we've had this in our minds for 2 years. We've been like playing around with the character, with the story for 2 years. And like I said, we were going through many, many variations of the script and character development and all these things. But it wasn't until maybe the summer of this year, that's when we picked it up again after a year of having it on a shelf, literally, and then rewriting everything and coming into it more open-minded, like I said, and just having fun instead of being so serious. I think that was the beginning of the development. But we did the pilot first, and it was a year before we even recorded the rest of the series.
Well, I was just going to say that was part and parcel to like helping write the rest of the series, in my opinion, because we did that pilot. I was in person for that one, thankfully. And we got a sense of the characters and how the actors were in person. And then based on that, we knew where their characters were going to go and how what we could get out of the actors as well from performance standpoints and what they really excelled in and stuff like that as we were writing and reading through the rest of the script. That was my takeaway from the development process that I enjoyed, actually. It was nice to have that first pilot done and then reflect on it and write the rest.
Yeah. For sure.
Excellent. I mean, compared to the other two projects that you've done, this is literally the polar opposite, I've got to say. So if you could talk about the script writing process, because, you know, how was it compared to doing a tense, you know, podcast like Ice Cream? I mean, it's got to be amazing, like a breath of fresh air to be able to let loose.
It was so much fun. Sometimes we would see things in the media or pop culture and we would draw from that, or we would have funny jokes with each other that was very Carson coded or Ember coded or any different kind of character coded that we would say to each other back and forth, and we would put it in our notes and say we have to put that in the script. So it was just a breath of fresh air trying to work on this new comedic style with both of these hilarious writers and our other, you know, writers that are involved. It was just a really enjoyable process to have something so funny when the world can be so dark. It's a nice, sweet escape.
Totally. And to add on to that, like, I think that with comedies in general, you know, especially sitcoms, you have the physical gags, you have the slipping on the banana or whatever, and that we don't have that in this show. And so for us, it was very important to have the foundation be the script. The story had to be very solid. And once we had that, we were able to kind of let go of it in the studio and play and ad lib, because we knew where the story, where the episode was going. So that's why it took us so much time to rewrite everything, because we wanted to make sure everything was so strong, the foundation, because then we could just build on top of that. And once we finally did, we were good to go, I think.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I like about the show, because I am a fan, I really, really am, is that it's so fast paced and there's so many gags in there. And there are some that are very close to the mark, which I love. I love flirting when people flirt with that line. I mean, when you was writing it and obviously getting stuff together, were there certain things that didn't make it in the script because you thought this is way too far?
Oh, yeah. We were like, are we going to get canceled a million times? Like, every time we're like, oh, is this too much? Are we going to get canceled?
Well, one thing that didn't make it into the script was the character Will. He was actually written as a lady shopper that Carson attacks. And after a while, Adam thought that might be too violent to make Carson physically attack a woman.
Yeah. So
we switched the script.
We were like, we can't have him attacking a woman. Like, that is insane. So we wrote it to be another flamboyant boy.
The jig is up. Say cheese, or should I say sex tape?
Give me that damn phone.
Get off of me. You don't take my phone. It's my personal property. Get your hands off me.
Carson, get off him.
But the thing is, the thing I like about comedy is that you can push those boundaries. You can, because satire, you know, but then you are risking people getting offended. But again, the great thing I like about this show is that it resonates with different cultures. So as you know, people in the UK, our sense of humor is slightly different. But I've got to say, it hits the mark. So you know, when he was writing it, did you have that in mind of, you know, how it was going to resonate with different sort of, you know, countries or cultures in particular?
When it comes to writing comedy, like, the first person that has to think it's funny is like the person that's creating it, right? So I think a lot, as long as we felt that it was funny, and then we would also consult with like the performers doing it, because the character was like them. It's like, does this feel like, you know, in the world of respectfulness, I guess? And then I guess comedy can translate. And I know that like comedy humor in like the UK is different in some ways than the US and North America. And like a lot of that is like visually represented too. So I think it was honestly a little bit of just like following that true mark of, is this funny or not? Is this safe or not? And writing that line, it kind of translates across cultures that way too. And we have such a diverse cast as well.
Yes.
I feel like that leaned into it as well.
And I mean, you know, like I said, once we had our script solid and we knew where the storyline was going, we went into the studio and we told the actors, let's now have fun with it. Throw it all away and ad lib or improv. And some of those takes made it, some of them didn't. But it was that freedom that we were able to have, that new energy coming into the writing process, that I think is the reason why it transcends through different, you know, cultures, because it's just genuine. We're just genuinely laughing and having a good time. And we hope that everyone else does too, you know?
So with your previous projects, they were quite immersive. And with this one, it's immersive on a different level, because the unique voices, the unique cast, you know, the talent that you've got is incredible. It really, really is. And it keeps your attention, and the characters are just formed so well and performed so well. I mean, what went into the casting of this show to find all these incredible voices?
I think we're just so lucky, surrounded by so many amazing, talented actors who are also our friends, that we kept in mind for the project. And once we had approached them with the script, they were very excited about it. Mm-hmm. And then once we had the pilot recorded, it was much easier to write the tone of the script with their voices in mind, because we could really feel the words coming from the page.
Exactly. And we were very open to accents and different types of voices, because like you said, a big cast like this, it's very important to have different types of voices, different types of accents, so you can follow along of who's talking and what, who's saying what, you know? So we loved having different types of voices and experimenting too. You know, the guy who plays my dad, Douglas, he plays my dad and Bernard, and we had him do a Texas accent and just my dad, you know? And so we were just having fun with that kind of stuff vocally, you know? And, yeah, we're very blessed to have a lot of actor friends that we were able to work with and to collaborate with.
I mean, the only voice that you're missing is an English voice, I've got to say.
I know.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
Our paramedic was English.
In episode one, we had a little paramedic. She's like, paramedic. So she was British. But season two, Brian, if you want to bust out the old acting chops.
I would be there. Well, obviously not there. Well, I could fly over. Who knows?
Well, budget.
But yeah, exactly. So Antonio, you actually directed some of Supermarket, but you did it totally online, which is very, you know, modern times. What was that like? Especially with internet connection and not actually being there. What was that experience like?
Well, it was certainly different, and different for good reasons and bad. I mean, being there is always preferred, but I have a great co-directors that can sense that energy in the room. And a lot of the time I was basically brain coupled with them, just telepathy, putting the notes in there, and they would say what exactly I was going to say or do exactly what I was going to do, and it would be done. So a lot of it was just kind of almost like voyeuring. And then if there was a last minute thing that I felt like we needed before we moved on, I would chime in and say it. But I got very lucky to have great co-directors. So it was like, I was like pseudo there in the flesh, but not there at the same time, if that makes any sense. But it was very much like nice to be a fly on the wall and like watch and listen and see how it all comes together remotely. But yeah, overall, I would say definitely better to be in person, but it's not impossible to be remote.
I mean, Alexandria, you actually directed in person. So what was that? What was that like? And with a script like this, were they just like a bunch of kids? You know, did you have to rein them in and crack that whip?
It was such a fun playground to play with. Everybody brought such a unique perspective to their characters that we didn't have to do a lot of directing. We gave a lot of notes and redirects, but they were all so talented. It was so much fun to get physical with them and show them also sides that maybe they didn't see. And working with other directors here, my other talented ones, they also caught things that I didn't see. So it was a very awesome collaborative experience overall.
We were definitely in tune. Like we joke about like having that same brain Wi-Fi because we were saying things and doing things before we even spoke, like Antonio said. And it was just, it's just a testament of true collaboration and just being on the same page. And we were just, that's a blessing when you get that. So,
yeah.
I mean, would you say it's more difficult to direct something like this than actually direct something that's on camera? Because, you know, I suppose for voice actors, you know, with the absence of visual, they've got to do so much more with their voice. They've got to do so much more, you know, animation with the tonality of their voice. So as a director that way, is it more difficult?
Personally, I feel like it's not like it's a bigger challenge, but with film, you're watching way more stuff. You also have to listen to the tone. You also have to listen to the energy, pacing, all the actors, the background, all of it. So I feel like visually is more, there's more going on that you have to be way more hyper-focused and attention on, and you'll lose stuff in that. Like, you, no one's perfect. They're going to miss something on one take and then get it on the other take. Whereas in audio, you are hyper-focused on the audio and there's only the audio. And yes, while your direction of the physicalities help the audio, it's still just the audio. And like, you're just listening for getting the right tones or the variety of tones. And then what other actors are inputting, how is it all going to sound together? What is, like, you know, the bigger picture in a sense in that audio space. So
paced,
I feel like the visual is a little bit more difficult and for the respect of the other medium being there, but the audio is more consequential if you get it wrong, whereas visual, you can save it, you know, a little bit.
I encouraged a lot of our actors to get physical throughout their performances. I encouraged one of our robbers to physically try to imagine himself holding Carson at gunpoint, and it really helped elevate the performance for him. So I think it is a little bit more challenging, but I think it's possible in both fields.
I will blow all your brains out right fucking now! Take us to the safe, open the safe, give us the money in the safe, then everyone will be safe!
Okay. Is there a safe word? What? Just in case things get a little too violent or...
Man, shut the fuck up!
Okay, shut the fuck up. This is a safe word. Noted.
Where is the goddamn safe?
Alexandria, you also not only directed, but you play Ember in the show.
Ember is
a great character. I've got my own sort of thoughts on the relationships and what's going on, you know, behind sort of the scenes, but we'll talk about that. But what was it like to not only direct but actually star in this show? How difficult was that?
It wasn't that difficult because I have these two amazing guys behind me to help guide me. So being a part of the writing process really helped the development of the character, which I think is really great. If you're an actor, you get to really be in depth and see where the character is going. You have a little bit more control with the molding of what you want. I really envisioned this Frankensteining of Ember to be Mandy from the Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. So I drew from her this brooding, kind of like angry little tot running around demanding things. And then I had Jade from Victorious, who's this kind of punky goth girl who's so evilly sweet and mean, you love to hate her. So I kind of meshed them together and it was fun. And then I went with that, and anytime I kind of needed any remolding, Antonio or Adam would tell me, you know, do it a little bit more like this or that, or elevate it or move it around. So it was really great that we just always were able to refer to each other to make it all work perfectly.
I mean, she has a rocky relationship with the lead character, I've got to say, in the show. And I personally secretly think that actually they could be really good friends. You know, they're very much alike. They're very much alike.
Look, Carson, I've been thinking a lot lately, and this banter between us, this frenemy shit, it was cute when we were 16, maybe 17. We're pushing 30 now. We've aged. We've grown. I think it's time we finally make a truce. Bridge the gap. End the war, if you will.
What do you want? What do you know? What are you scheming, devil?
Carson, what a character. And is performed by the wonderful Adam.
Thank you.
You know, if you could talk us through the character of Carson, where he was formed from. Is he based on anyone that maybe in show business currently that you don't.
I know there's Carsons out there in show business for sure, but he, you know what? He is truly just this crazy, obnoxious character that you start off with. You know, in the first episode, you see him just completely out of touch, but throughout the season, it's fun because he kind of comes back down to earth, kind of keyword. And, you know, his co-workers are kind of dealing with him. They're not taking his shit, so they're grounding him a little bit. And so throughout the show, you kind of see that dynamic. But I believe Carson deep down is a good person. He's definitely loyal. We see that throughout the show with Suhail, with his family, his mom, episode 3, spoiler. And, you know, I think he is a good person, but eventually it's going to have to get to that. And I think throughout the series, I'm excited to watch that develop for sure. But he's very obnoxious and just a delight to play, because it's like I could say things that you could never dream of saying, you know, and it's all through that character. So it's fun.
I think he says things that we all secretly want to say.
Yes. No filter.
I've got to say, though, my favorite moment, without spoiling it for the audience, is something to do with Oprah.
My goodness.
And something to do with an aisle. And there is a moment, and literally my wife said, "Are you all right?" Because I gasped. I went like that. And she was like, "You're all right." I was like, "Yeah." Just fantastic.
We did our job.
Moment. Really, really is.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, Antonio, obviously this is an audio sitcom, but there's been some animations created which are awesome. I mean, iconic. What sort of work went into this and the thought behind doing this?
Well, Adam was in the editing hole, as we call it, editing the show day in and day out, you know, taking our notes, making them happen, and just like making the show so well. I was like, what can I do with the tools that I have to help him and like not just like say great work every week, you know, or like, you know, my notes. I wanted to do something more. And then I got into thinking about like the promotion that we had coming up and then what we were going to do on socials and visuals. And, you know, up to this point, we had just done like, it's like some audios with some like graphics and stuff, and the same with the other shows as well, but I wanted to just take it up a notch. And then I kind of was looking into my Adobe suite and what I have at my disposal, and I kind of came across Character Animator and started researching and watching videos of how to make animations with that. And I came across like a really good like template that's free to use, and these characters were in that. I built them all out myself with those. I did some like tweaking and design with little later animations when he puts on like costumes and stuff. And thankfully with Adobe, it's all like kind of across the board connected. So you can like pull the animation up in Photoshop and edit that character, and then it'll go right back into the animation live and be like ready to work. So I got really familiar with it as I went along, and I made these 1 minute animation clips, and they liked it and the fans seemed to like it. So I kept going with it. And, that's how they kind of came to be.
It is awesome.
It just elevates show, and it gives it a visual element, which is so amazing. When he came up with it, I was like, yes, Antonio, this is it. So
usually we're against putting the visuals out because we find that audio series dramas are more like books where people can create those characters in their minds and they own part of that visual IP. And like, we really wanted to like keep that with our previous projects because that was a big part of, you know, this. But when it came to this, it was like, okay, we'll take the reins and we'll create some characters. And animation felt like the kind of go-between. It was like, it's not really people, but it's not, you know, not people at the same time.
Exactly.
If that makes any sense. But you know what I'm getting at.
And everything
like,
about the
show is just like that different.
Yeah, and everything about the show is different than the first two that we've done. So this really aligns with the animation and visual. It really aligns with what we were doing. So it's perfect.
So with this, I mean, I can imagine it as like a cartoon, like South Park or something like that.
Like, I mean, Family Guy, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, would that be something that you may consider? Because obviously you were just saying that you like the fact that it's an audio so people can use their imaginations. But maybe another project or around this, like an, you know, spin-off?
I would love to do an animation of this show. I feel like if we got picked up to do that, we would re-record almost everything if we could afford to do that, because with a visual element, now you can write it different, right? We can have different gags set up within that. And like, you know, that will affect how the writing is done. The same story through line should follow, but like you could tweak a little bit of the scenes. Cause I feel like even when people adapt books into movies, I feel like that's the secret sauce, is if you add to the piece, you don't just pull directly from it and just expect people to love it. It's like, you're not adding to anything, you know? So I feel like we would need to add to it and take it up a notch a little bit.
And give surprises too, like the visual element, like some surprises and different twists and stuff. Yeah, I totally agree.
We can have little Easter 100%. Eggs as well. Aisle 3 is the biggest Easter egg of all, I would say.
Everything goes down in aisle 3.
There's a couple other
that one was the hardest to animate the background of, because it was such an iconic aisle. I was like, I can't mess this one up. It's got to be unique.
I mean, talking about your other two shows, I mean, is this one, was it harder? Or was it easier than recording the other two?
I feel like the first two were so dark, and you know, I mean, they were all hard to do in different ways. The first two were very dark, and we felt like we would leave the studio emotionally drained because of just the topic that we were doing, which is, you know, Cascadia was a deep sea underwater submarine thriller. We were screaming and running and being chased by this
crying
demonic crying and all these things. And Ice Cream, you know, there was, you know, it was about missing children in the late 1980s and an ice cream man. And so, you know, there were dark topics. And so we would leave the studio like just drained because we were giving all our emotions. This, we were laughing the whole time, but also we were drained because even like when I was doing like my part, you know, I'd be in the studio for 8 hours in a day, but I'd have to keep the energy up as Carson because he doesn't stop. And so I'm giving everything 110, and all the actors give 110%. And so by the end of the day, I was drained, but like, because I was giving so much energy. So hard in different sorts of ways for sure. Yeah.
I mean, you guys have a lot of great guest stars on the show, some great voices. Was there anyone in particular that you were excited to work alongside?
First of all, we loved all our guest stars. They were all fun to work with and amazing. We were so thankful that they came on and showed their talents. But for Oprah, so Oprah comes on the show. She's a big part of the plot, and we needed some sort of Oprah impersonator for sure. And before we even wrote the full script of the show, this is way back in the earlier days, I just put out on Reddit like an anonymous posting under anonymous account. So nobody knew I wasn't from Toronto. I'm just looking for anyone who does Oprah impersonations. I was doing a worldwide search. I didn't care if you lived in England, in Australia, Canada, whatever. I just wanted to see if anyone out there would be able to do that. And somebody replied to me saying, hey, yeah, there's this girl named Hillary Warden and she lives in Toronto. And again, this person couldn't have known that I lived in Toronto. And I was like, no way. So I search her up like a creep, and I find her on social media because we have a lot of actor mutual friends, and I reach out to her and I say, hey, look, my name is Adam. I'm doing this project. Would you be interested? I heard you could do an Oprah impersonation. Would you be interested? And she's like, of course. And so I got her to send in a little audition tape because I just wanted to see how good she was. And she was amazing. And then she came into the studio and absolutely blew us away. Like, absolutely. Yeah. She's so talented. And I just can't, that story is just so funny to me that we found somebody. Cause I figured I was going to find someone remote and they would send in some kind of, you know, recording of it. But the fact that she lived in our same city that we were recording in, and we got to meet her, it was so cool. So that was probably like my favorite story from all the guest stars for sure.
Yeah.
Carson! Carson!
Oprah! Oprah!
Wow. Wow. I just have to say, I saw your video and I am mind blown. For someone who was as famous as you, for someone who is as rich as you.
Well, $10 million to be exact.
To be working at such a humble job, it brought tears to my eyes. Tears!
Just out of curiosity, did everyone record in the studio or did people record remotely as well?
We were all together in the studio for the pilot, but then because of scheduling conflicts and stuff, we couldn't do it all together in the studio for the rest of the season. So each actor came in, and this was also very unique because we got to focus on the actor instead of just kind of hearing the whole performance and just not being able to focus on each person. However, we definitely want to make sure next season that there'll be more time that we can actually go in the studio at the same time and do it, because it was just, it's more fun to do and also less editing for me. So I had to Frankenstein every line and put it together, and it was very time consuming. But again, it was unique because I got to listen to 10 takes from Elijah and choose the best line and put it in, instead of maybe having 3 takes of all of us together kind of thing, you know? So it was more isolated that way. Yeah.
And for directing, it made it a lot easier when the actors actually were partnered with their scene partner, because they were able to elevate their performance based on the reaction that they were actually given. Oftentimes it was Adam or myself reading the other person's lines. So we did try to give the same energy to the characters. You should hear the amount of Suhail impressions we heard from each of us. But so having the actual cast together gives such a better, well-rounded performance. Yeah. Not that they were capable, but it makes it more fun and bouncy.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, and having them there, I suppose you can bounce off each other and you can feel that energy.
And sometimes like scheduling would work out where, you know, the actor would come in a little earlier before the other actor and they were in the same scene together. So we got them to do the scene. So we were able to do that sometimes, but most of the rest of the season, everyone was kind of on their own. But as for remote as well, not really. We had like some reporters were remote or, you know, other, those kind of roles, but most of the core cast was in person for sure.
Yeah. Josh and I, we did our scene together.
Yes, so that was funny.
Yeah, that was fun. Being drunk with him was so much fun.
Oh, so it was method then. So you did have
sorry. Yeah, I
said drink in the studio. Go, chug.
No, I meant
in the show.
So watch him across the booth, and we're like, woo! Yeah. Kind of slamming ourselves.
I'm like, more. Give me more drunkenness. I want to hear the slurring in the voice, you know.
Take a shot and do it again.
Like holding a water bottle, going like, let's party.
Literally.
Every sitcom has got a great theme song. You know, you've got Big Bang Theory, and you've got the classics from the 80s and 90s. And this has got a great theme song. It really has. It's very catchy. Where did that theme song come about? Who recorded it? I mean, who wrote it? It's just fantastic.
Thank you. We were inspired, like I said, by the late 1990s, early 2000s sitcoms. This whole show is very much a love letter to that, you know. And so I approached one of our creators, Joe Diaco, and he's a musician. And I said, Joe, would you be able to create something along the lines like The Nanny? The Nanny has a theme song where they kind of explain the whole premise in just 30 seconds. And I was like, I would really love if you can somehow write lyrics to explain the whole basically first episode in 30 seconds. And he said, I got you. And came back with this amazing lyrics and song. And I was like, how did you do that in one day? But okay. And then he's like, I have a perfect singer for this, Andriana Shabbat. And they collaborated. And before you know it, they sent me a draft. Like, this is just an early draft. I'm like, this is an early draft. This is amazing. And I was like, we don't need no notes. Perfect. And they recorded it professionally. And then that's what we did.
And The Nanny, it was one of my favorite shows when I was growing up as well. Who would think that she would, you know, go on to be head of SAG? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Which I think is fantastic.
Which is ironic because the whole show, our show was, you know, delayed for a year because of the writer's strike. And she was, you know, fighting for us. It's all connected. It's
full
just
circle.
It's crazy.
Full circle. Yeah. I mean, the great thing about this show as well is, you know, when you're listening, and I've got to say, anyone that wants to listen to this, you need to wear headphones. Because the sound design in this show is amazing. And it's just astonishing how you get it to all work. And if you close your eyes, you do feel like literally you're in the middle of, you know, the supermarket or the office. And you know, someone's walking away. I mean, which scenes were the most difficult to actually, you know, record in the way of the sound?
Well, you know what? This show was actually very simple to sound design compared to our first two shows. Our first two shows, the first one was sci-fi, second one was a horror. So it was very heavy on sound design and sound effects and music. And so that was very hard. This was super simple. We only had the supermarket. We had Suhail's office, the loading docks, and the outside. Those were our four sets, quote unquote, right? But, you know, there was hard times of editing for sure. Like I would say in episode 4 when the robbers come in, because there's a lot of physicality in that episode. The robbers break down the doors, they choke Carson, you know, all these things that happen. There's a gun involved. So that was the most challenging to sound design. But other than that, it was pretty simple. It was more, like I said, about timing of the voices and the beats of the actors' performances and making sure everything hit perfectly. That was more of the challenge this show, for sure.
Favorite scene, favorite moment from recording this whole series? So we'll go around the room. Antonio, what's been your favorite thing about recording Supermarket?
Well, I'm kind of biased because like my favorite character in all of our 911 productions is Carson. So like a lot of his stuff and his story arc and the whole show, I've just been obsessed with. I've loved it. I love that it's never like changed his personality, but it's like the story has changed the way he conducts himself in life and like his priorities and what's important to him. You'll see in the last episode, it all kind of comes together. I'm trying to think of a distinct moment where I felt like it really shifted when he's with Theo in the back room. There's a scene there that I really liked, and that I feel like that one stands out for me when I'm thinking about the whole series. I don't know. That's the one that's like the turning point for him.
When they kind of open up to each other and he's kind of just like,
Yeah. When they're starting to like fall for each other a bit. And like, you kind of see Carson in a different way and like off guard in a sense. And then like, you know, his priorities shift when Oprah comes into the picture and kind of like puts a risk. So I'm like, that all like pulls on the heartstrings for me for that character and that is my favorite probably.
Anywho, let's just say Hollywood sucked me in, chewed me up, and spat me back out. There was seriously a time where I thought I'd never leave showbiz, but the more time I spent away from that town, the more I'm starting to realize how toxic Hollywood truly is.
Ah, oh, I bet. But I'm sure it's much more fun than this small Hagertown.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely.
And Alexandria?
I really love the scene between Carson and Hillary when he gets the phone call from Oprah and he's explaining to Hillary what Oprah said. And all the actress Janelle had to say was what? And she said it tonally so many different ways. And the scene is so funny just because she's saying what over and over. And at the end, Carson says, girl, you need to learn another word other than what? And she's like what? It kills me every time I listen to it because it's such simple, stupid comedy that makes me laugh. There's so many comedic nuggets of gold throughout the whole thing that makes me laugh really hard.
Shut the frick up.
What?
Shut the frick up.
What?
Shut the frickity frackity frack up.
What?
Yes, of course. I'll be there. Of course. Ta-ta.
What?
Hillary, open.
to sell my video!
What?
She has a proposal for me and the supermarket, and she has summoned me to her office in LA to meet right now!
What?
Girl, you've got to find another word other than what?
Like what?
Okay, I'm leaving now. If Suhail asks, tell him that I'm saving the day yet again!
What?
No, but actually just say that because, you know I just exposed to the entire world where I work, but Theo has really inspired me to try to be more private.
Entering my elusive era. Ciao for now!
What?
And Adam, what about you?
It's hard to pick because, like, it's like my baby, all of them. I'm so proud of all the actors and all the scenes and everything. But I really have to say Suhail Singh belting out James Blunt. That is the funnest, yes. Funniest scene for me. I don't know if you've gotten to that part yet in the episode.
Haven't gotten there yet. No.
Oh, you haven't gotten there yet. You don't even know what's in store for you. Yeah. He is belting it out. I'm not going to ruin it, but it was so freaking unhinged and funny to record and do. And the way that even came about, I remember we needed some kind of climax in this ending of this episode, ending of that kind of storyline. And I was like, I don't know what we're going to do, how we're going to like have that all wrapped up. And I was at the mall and that song by James Blunt was playing on the radio. And I was like, what if Suhail is singing this on his way out of the supermarket? And I pitched it to them and they loved it and we just ran with it. And that's what I'm saying.
So
it
iconic.
Was just so silly and so fun that we got into a headspace of writing where it just became fun and just like trying new things and just have fun with it. And that was and Sujith, who's the actor, killed it. We did it two times and he just it's just so funny. It's I laugh every time.
Did I disappoint you or let you down? Should I be feeling guilty or let the judges frown?
What?
Because I saw the end before we began. Yes, I saw you were blinded and I knew I had won. So I took what's mine by eternal right, took your soul out into the night.
What the fuck is he saying?
It may be over, but it won't stop there. I am here for you, if you'd only care. You touched my heart. You touched my soul. You changed my life and all my goals. And love is blind, but that I knew. When my heart was blinded by yours, I've kissed your lips and held your hand, shared your dreams and shared your bed. I know you well. I know your smell. I've been addicted to you.
Straight up, this is weird.
Goodbye, my lover.
Is he quoting?
Goodbye, my friend.
He's quoting.
You have been the one. You have been the one for me. Goodbye, my lover.
All right, let's
Goodbye,
go.
I've got to ask as well, who's responsible for having the song I'm Horny in the show?
Oh, me.
Because that is one of my favorite songs from growth.
I just thought it'd be really funny.
I mean, I'm like 44, so when I was younger, that was on in the clubs. And
yeah,
to hear that, I was like, yeah, you've got me now.
Carson's ringtone in episode one. Yep. Yeah, yeah. How ironic. He's in a sex tape and he has that as his ringtone. So, of course.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And the great thing is, you mentioned earlier on that you know, maybe next season. So we're getting a season two. Is that right?
Yes, we are.
And is that currently being written now or is it being recorded or have we got a time frame? I need to know.
It's in development right now. We're in the early processes of developing the story, but we have an arc for where we want it to go for sure. Right, Antonio?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, agreed, for sure.
Oh, I cannot wait. And then I'm going to do one last round robin on with season two. If you could pick any star to guest on the actual show, what star would you have? I'll go with probably Adam first because Antonio is looking like he's deep in thought. He's thinking, oh, I don't know. So Adam, who would you love to work with on season two?
Okay, she's not alive. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. I'm on this I'm on this Golden Girl binge. I don't know why. I've just started watching it. It's so funny. I'm like, it holds up. I love it. So I would love, love, love in another life to work with Betty White. She's just the queen of comedy. So
do you know what? Talking about the Golden Girls, obviously I mentioned earlier on that I'm a manager at a supermarket and we have music playing. Do you know what? Like every fifth song being played, it's the acoustic version of the Golden Girls theme.
No. Sang.
And it's so good.
It's a real song?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't know it was a real song. I thought it was...
Someone's taken it and turned it into an acoustic song.
Oh,
it's just amazing. It's fantastic. And what about you, Alexandria? Who would you like to have on your dream guest star?
I've never even considered that.
I got someone if we want to come back, Alex.
Yes, go ahead. You go ahead, sir.
In spirit of the animations and the people receiving those like that, I think it would be cool to have Seth MacFarlane on an episode and doing some of his Family Guy voices. Like maybe they come into the supermarket and, you know, they're shopping and like maybe he brings his, you know, family with them and there's like some sort of interaction with Peter Griffin, the Stewie, Lois, like the gang, as it were, from Family Guy. So Seth MacFarlane and all people attached that could be with him would be a great guest star appearance in our show. I would love that. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I second Antonio with that.
she's like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. No, that's
there's fine. A few actors in there. Mila Kunis, you know, she's in there. Seth Green.
Yeah, Mila Kunis.
There we go.
Mila Kunis, there you go.
But no, I can't wait for everyone to listen to it. It's on, you know, it's available on all podcast platforms. If you do want to follow all the progress, you've got the Instagram just there, which is at 911 podcasts. Give them a follow so you find out what happens with season two. I'm sure the news will be on there. And also you can see some of the wonderful animations as well. Is there any other messages that you'd like to give the audience and the listeners about the show before we bid farewell?
I would free. Love to tell people that. Oh, yeah, it's free. Yes. Yeah.
It's free. Just go and enjoy. It's a free show. You can go and listen to it and binge it and just give yourself some laughs. Why not? Right.
So, yes. Anyway. Yeah. I was just going to say that to echo Adam, the show does not try to be anything more than what it is. Like it's got stakes and drama, but it's still there. It's a laugh all the way through, like through all of that too. So it'll pull on your heartstrings, but you'll laugh like 80% of the time. So that's what I like the most about the show.
Sure.
And we have freaking Oprah on the show. So not real, but you know, Oprah character. So I mean, that should sell it to you.
Yeah. And wear your headphones. Adam worked really hard to make it an immersive experience for everyone.
Thank you.
And it does make a difference. And the one line is in it, especially when you say, fuck my life. I just think that is FML.
Dead ass.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just so much stuff going on. And hopefully season two will be coming around the corner before we know. But thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank
you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.